Sorry for producing noise while Pam was still speaking. And I have a handout to distribute, G, and I'm afraid the printer isn't the best. So, yeah, okay. Are you?
Yeah.
Good. And is it time to start, or was there supposed to be some break or something?
No, you're good.
I'm good?
You're good.
Okay. If that's what you say. I don't know. So, part of the reason I want to talk to you about maps and machines is because it's sort of a little bit different than the usual mathematics. So we're used to thinking of mathematics as being a very, very rigid topic. So it's about, well, numbers in the bad case. So 23 times 27 is equal to, I will not risk myself. Or about formulas, and that's maybe a bit better, but it's still very, very rigid. So that's the truth. Forget it. You can't argue. In fact, you still can't argue when I will talk, but this is sort of, I don't know, very tough and rigid. Or maybe, and unfortunately that's been largely removed from high school curriculum, it's about geometrical figures. But again, they are hard. You can't move them around. So I don't know what to say about this geometrical figure, but that's what math is, right? So I want to talk to you about a different part of math, which is, well, maybe we can call it topology, but it's about the part of math where things are completely deformable, mushable, malleable. Is this an English word? I think it is. Massageable, sort of can take different shapes, but it's still math. It's still math in that it is completely abstract and does not, while it can be applied to many specific situations, it isn't about any specific situation. It's about all of them. Okay? And the results at the end are rigid in a different way. I mean, they are true results. When I'll tell you answers, they will be the answers, and it will not be like in history, a subject for a further argument, or political science, a subject for further debate. So it really is math. Anyway, so the key to what I will... Oh, by the way, I should say that everything I will be talking about is on the web, so you can go back and... And, you know, this is a Classroom Adventures event, so you may want to. I mean, you may want to recycle some of this material. So I suppose you'll go to... either one of the URLs on the handout or to this URL. If you go to this URL, you'll find that I've given this talk a good number of times, so look for the latest, and this is the one I'm giving right now. Okay? Anyway, oh, and I should also say that everything is based on a master's thesis by a former student of mine, Dori Eldar. Okay. So let's start with the basic definition. And this is the backside of your handout and the most important part of this lecture, and I want to tell you about it. So a top map, so a top is just a short for topological, okay? But a top map is a one-to-one correspondence, so it's a between... the places or states of reality, so places I'm sure you understand, states I will explain in a minute, of reality, and the points of some easily studied surface. Okay? with so what's a one-to-one correspondence? It means that every point in reality, every place in reality, or every state of reality corresponds to a point of the surface, and every point of the surface corresponds to a place or a state in reality, and it's one-to-one. So one place in reality corresponds to one place on the surface, and vice versa. So I also have an extra condition, and the extra condition is that if two points on the surface are very, very close to each other, they correspond to places or states in reality which are very, very close to each other, and vice versa. So if two places or states of reality are very, very close to each other, then they should be very, very close on the surface. Okay? So here are a few examples just to convince you that the subject is not entirely trivial. Okay? So here are four equally good maps of planet Earth. So planet Earth, I think you know what it is. I don't need to introduce it. And here is a surface. The surface here is a rectangle. And the points of this surface correspond to places in reality. So here is Florida, and here is Toronto. Okay? And furthermore, there is this property that if two places on the map are very close to each other, so England and Ireland, then they correspond to places that are very close to each other in reality. And likewise, if two places in reality are very close to each other, that end of the room and the other end of the room, they correspond to places on the map which are very close to each other. In this case, two places on the map which are within the same pixel. Okay? But you see, this is one map, but for me, this map is equally good. This is a map in which people took the population of each country and blown its area so that it would be proportional to its population. It still retains the good property that nearby places are nearby. So we can still tell that the United States is close to Canada. But we can also tell that the population of the United States is much bigger than the population of Canada, something that we could not tell by looking at this map. Okay? So, and also we can tell that China and India are huge, 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 and, Canada is small, sorry. Okay? I'm just defining what a top map is. Okay? For navigation purposes, you might want a map that preserves distances or at least scales distances with a constant factor. But my purposes might be different. So if I want to illustrate population, that's a better map than this one. If I want to illustrate GDP, gross domestic product, that's a better map. And it shows that the U.S. expands to, and so does Japan, and this is France and Germany. It's a bit ridiculous, and all of Africa shrinks to almost nothing. Okay? And here is a child mortality map. Okay? And the Americas shrink to something very, very thin, but Africa blows up to... So all of these maps, from my perspective as a topologist, are equally good. But as a navigator, that one will be the best. As a, I don't know, who does populations? That one would be the best. As an economist, that would be the best. As a doctor, maybe that one would be the best. Okay? Okay. Unfortunately, all of these maps are not equally good, but equally bad. Okay? All of these maps break the definition of a top map. All of these maps are wrong. All of these maps are not maps for me. And the reason is that two points in reality that are very, very nearby corresponds to two points on this map which are very far away. Namely, Alaska and, the far east side of Siberia. So in reality, these two points are very close to each other. On this map, they appear very, very far. So that's not a map for me, not at all. I mean, the bulk of it is good, but there are parts that completely fail. So, you know, suppose there were lions here, and I was hiking here, I would think that I'm out of danger. But in reality, the lions will be right next to me. I should be scared, but the map would not tell me to be scared. Okay? Likewise for all of the others. Okay, are you with me? But let me scroll down a bit, and here are a bunch of maps that are equally good. Okay? So, this is the usual globe. Here's a globe drawn on a cube. It's equally good because you see, I mean, if there are, where is Siberia? And, I guess it's sort of a bit hard to see. But again, if there are lions in Alaska and I'm in Siberia, I'll know that I'm near them. I'll know that I'm near them. And finally, this is a dodecahedral map, and for me, it's equally good. And this is the a potato map. And again, for me, it's equally good. From the perspective of being near, knowing that I'm near a danger, it's equally good. Are you with me? Is this okay? Okay, good. But you see, you may want to map machines rather than places. So machines have states rather than positions, rather than places. So what do I mean by that? So first of all, here are two examples of a machine. This is a steam engine, and it has a wheel that can be spinning, and it has a cylinder that can be, I don't know what cylinders do, and it has little rods that can be that way or another way. Basically, this steam engine has many, many states, many, many possible positions, okay? There are many, many different ways you can put all of its elements while it is still called a steam engine. So a map for this steam engine would be some surface whose points correspond to the states of that steam engine. So it would be some surface so that each point corresponds to some specific way of placing the components of the steam engine. So this point might correspond to the cylinder being pushed in, whereas when you move to that point, it would correspond to the cylinder being pushed out. Cylinder, it's called? No. What are the? Piston. Piston, right. Okay, good. Anyway, well, you know, here's an abstract machine, and the same considerations applied. It's made out of rods and joints and things like that. Okay? And again, why would I care about mapping a machine? I could be the manufacturer of this steam engine, and I could be telling you that certain states are more prone to breakage. Okay? So I might want to mark in red a part of the state space and say, when the engine is in one of those states, it's much more likely to break. And again, you might want to know, am I near the danger zone or am I far from the danger zone? And that's why you might want to care about a top map in which the distances on the map are near, if and only if the distances in reality are near. Okay? So I will be even more specific than that, and I will only tell you how to map a certain collection of very, very basic machines. Of course, now, so you could be talking about maps for more complicated machines, but, well, you know, I have an hour. Okay? So my machines are always...
Ooh, that was bad. It's broken.
It's near a breakage point, then. I should have been listening to myself. Okay, so my machines will always be made of rods or rigid bars that are... Sorry, they will always be in the plane. Okay? They will always be made of rigid bars that are fixed size and straight lines of fixed size. They may have joints in which, well, you can see what a joint does, and they may have anchors in which the end of the machine or some end or some joint is anchored to the plane and cannot move any further. And other than that, it can move freely. This machine, by the way, is called Poiseuille's machine. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. And it's actually useful because it converts radial motion to linear motion. But I don't want to talk about it specifically, okay? But let me tell you about two more examples. So here is a very simple-minded machine. It has one anchor, two rods or two rigid bars, and two joints, and it's very hard to follow them because they run around. And here's the machine I really, really care about, not for any real reason except because it leads to an interesting story, okay? And it's called a roach. So you see, a roach has six legs, a bud and a body. The body is in the middle. Each leg is made out of two rods and one joint. And I do the usual cruel thing that biologists do. We mathematicians don't do, but I'm only do that. Don't do that, but I'm only imitating, right? So it's only a model. So namely, I put a glass on top so the roach can only move in the plane, and I pin its legs so that, well, even less freedom of motion is left. And now you can see it's moving as much as it can. It's going between different states. And my question is, what kind of surface do I need in order to map the states of this roach? For the sake of the example, I will pretend that legs can sort of go over each other the way they sometimes do here. Alternatively, I could have pulled the anchors a bit tighter, but not too tight, because then there will be no freedom of motion left. But I could have pulled the anchors a bit further out, and then this situation would stop occurring. Okay? So... sorry, this was just to illustrate that, that's actually a spider, not a roach, but just to remind you that things like that happen. And this is what biologists really do. This is a picture taken in a museum in Berkeley 13 years ago. And back to my roach, except my roach is a bit too complicated, so I'll start with even simpler machines. Okay? So here is the half-legged roach. You see, a roach has six legs. If it had one leg, it would have two rods with two joints and one end anchor. So this is the half-legged roach. It says one leg, but it's really half-legged. Okay? Here is the body, and here is the anchor. And what are the states of this machine? So the leg, or rather the body, can spin around where the leg is anchored. And the states of this machine, or the configuration space, the space on which I can draw a map of the states, is clearly a circle. Every point of the circle corresponds to a state of the machine. Two points on the circle are nearby if the corresponding states of the machine are nearby, two and vice versa. Okay? But of course, it doesn't have to be a circle. From my perspective, it could have equally well been a hexagon and equally well been an ellipse. And there are, of course, other choices. Okay?
Could it be a line segment?
No, it could not be a line segment. Because, right, that's a good question. You could ask, well, you know, a state of the machine is completely described by this angle, alpha. And so this is the body. And the angle alpha runs between 0 and 360, 2 pi if you insist. Therefore, a state space for the configuration space for this roach would be the line interval whose left coordinate is at 0 and whose right end is at 360, wrong. Because 1 and 359 are far away on the map, but correspond to nearby places in nearby states in reality. So 1 corresponds to this, 359 corresponds to that, and they are nearby. Okay? So no, it is not an interval, it's a circle. No. You could say, right, why don't we measure angles allowing angles greater than 360. But then I'll break the one-to-one assumption. So I want every point of reality, every state in reality, to have a unique point on the map. And vice versa. But anyway, if I use this, then the point in reality that corresponds to 30 is also described by 390, and it's not unique. Okay. So, okay, that was still a warm-up. Let's now talk about the one-legged machine. Again, sorry for the wrong labeling. This is just one leg. Okay? What's the configuration space of that? Oops, that's bad. What's the configuration space of that? Sorry. You know what? I'll just do it on the board. What's the configuration space of the full one-legged roach? That's actually beginning to be interesting. Anybody willing to guess? What? Close. You probably mean the right thing, but possibly using the wrong language. So let's look at it. It's a torus, which is sort of sometimes confused with an annulus, but these are actually different shapes. Okay? So here's the body. Sorry, here's the leg. Here's first joint. Here's second joint. Here's the body. A state of this machine is completely described in terms of two angles. The angle alpha over here and the angle beta over here. Each of these angles can run between 0 and 360 or 0 and 2 pi, if you insist. And therefore, the first naive guess for the state space is a square, because, well, the square whose sides describe alpha and beta. So alpha runs from 0 to 360, and beta runs from 0 to 360. And every point in the square corresponds to a certain fixed value of alpha and a certain fixed value of beta, and therefore a fixed placement of our machine. Okay? Why is it wrong? Well, I already sort of said why it's wrong. It's wrong because the right end, if alpha is 360, that's exactly the same as if alpha is equal to 0. So really, the points here are the same as the points here. So I should be gluing the left-hand side to the right-hand side. I'll indicate it by an arrow, so or maybe by a pair of arrows. So the pair of arrows should be glued to the pair of arrows, or the edge on which there is a pair of arrows should be glued to the edge with the other pair of arrows. So therefore, the configuration space should look like a cylinder, which sort of has a seam somewhere on the side where I've glued, I mean, the seam point, the seam line corresponds to alpha is equal to either 0 or 360, which is the same. Is this okay? No. It's wrong in a similar way, exactly. It's wrong in a similar way because of beta. Because you see, when beta is equal to 0, it's the same as if beta is equal to 360. So I should be gluing this line to that line. Okay? So, well, but this line in this picture really corresponds to the line at the top. This line in this picture corresponds to the line at the bottom. And I should be gluing them to each other. So I should be taking the top, connecting it, well, bending it from, for a topologist, does nothing. Bending it does not make it a lesser map or a worse or a better map. Okay? So for a topologist, I could just bend it with no cost and then glue the top to the bottom. And what I will get is the inner tube of a car tire, okay? Or a donut, the surface of a donut, not the inside. Don't eat it. It's just the surface. It's just the glazing, okay? And it's also called a torus, okay? By the way, an annulus is a planar domain which is between the domain between two circles. If you want to get from it, so a torus sort of has to live in a three-dimensional space. It's still a surface. It's still a two-dimensional surface because I only care about the edge, but you can only put it in a three-dimensional space, whereas an annulus could be put in the plane. If you want to go from here to here, you have to blow air in. Okay? You have to make it out of two membranes and blow one at the top, one behind, one at the top, and blow air in, and then you'll get that. Well, let's go for the next more complicated machine, a three-chain. So this is a one-and-a-half-legged roach, if you wish. Okay? So if the body is here, then one leg is full and the other leg is only half. What's the configuration space of this machine? So we can actually watch it run through its, move around within its configuration space, and that will probably give us the answer. But let me sort of play the animation that hopefully will tell us the answer in a little bit more detail. So first of all, notice that no matter where the body is, there are two, so for any given placement of the body, there are two potential placements of the full leg. It has to be bent, and it is either bent down or bent up. Okay? So, to fully describe the machine, you have to say where the body is, and the body has to be on some arc that starts about here and ends about here. So you have to state, you have to describe a point on an arc, and you have to give one further bit of information, purple or yellow, up or down. Okay? Or alternatively, you could say that a state of this machine is described by a point on the union of two arcs. One arc corresponds to placements of the body, given that we are purple, and the other arc corresponds to placements of the body, given that we're in a yellow state. Okay? So the answer is two arcs. More or less. At least this is the first approximation for the answer. So you see, here's what it looks like. As the body moves, the corresponding two points, there are two points that move correspondingly on the arcs, and the purple point will correspond to the purple placement of the machine, the purple state of the machine, and the yellow point will correspond to the yellow state of the machine. Are you with me? Okay. Of course, that's a bit wrong. And the reason it's wrong is that when we go all the way up, when the body goes all the way to the end of the arc, for a brief fraction of a second, purple and yellow are the same. They correspond to the same state of the machine. So in fact, this end point is the same as that end point. Let's see it as an animation. So when we come near the top, we find that these two points are really the same, so we should be gluing them to each other. And we get this shape, which is still wrong because there is also the other side. So we look at the other side and we need to glue the corresponding pairs of points, and we get, well, a circle. Okay? So if I wanted to draw the state space of this machine, I would have to draw it on a circle. Okay? And any point on the circle corresponds to a state of the machine, vice versa. When the circle moves, when the point here moves slowly, it corresponds to a slow motion of the machine, and so on. Are you with me? So now let's go to the two-legged roach. We still have, four and a half legs to add? Sorry, four... Yeah, four and a half legs to add. So let's add one half more and talk about the two-legged roach. Okay? I think it comes here with the answer. What is the on what surface would you draw the configuration space of this machine? So the answer is, well, first of all, let's freeze it for a second. If we freeze it so that the left joint is in a certain place, then the freedom that remains to the one and a half legs on the right is the exact same freedom that we talked about before. So if we, essentially, if we pin this knee, right, if we pin this knee, what we're left with is a one and a half legged roach. Okay, whose configuration space is a circle. So we get a circle as the configuration space, the red circle over here. Now we get one circle for each way of freezing the knee, the left knee. So, the left knee could be anywhere along an arc going from somewhere at the bottom to somewhere at the top. So we appear to get a cylinder. For every placement of the left knee, we have a circle worth of possibilities. Right? Except when the left knee is at the very, very bottom, the rest of the roach is fully stretched, has no further freedom of motion. So it's so the configuration space at the very bottom is one point. And the configuration space at the very top is also just one point. So in fact, I should be taking this whole circle, which corresponds to the top, and contracting it to a single point, and likewise at the bottom. And then what I get is a cylinder crushed on both ends, which is like a candy wrapper, if you think of it. And it's also called a sphere. So the points, the states of this machine are in one-to-one correspondence with the points of a sphere, and we can watch it move a little bit longer so that you are maybe convinced. Are you convinced? Do I have... can I move on? Can I add another leg? Okay. So let's add another leg. Sorry, I don't want to add another leg. I want to study this one a little bit further. Sorry. So here's a different way of getting the same answer. So, here's my machine, which is again just a, here's the body, and it's a two-legged roach. Let me think for a minute, instead of thinking from the perspective of the left knee, let me think from the perspective of the body. Where can the body be? The body can be anywhere. Well, to the left it is bound by, we cannot stretch beyond a certain amount, the right leg. On the right, it is bound by how far we can stretch the left leg. So the body can be anywhere inside a shape like this, which is, what is it called, an orange peel perhaps? Any better name? Let's call it an orange peel, okay? So in order to map where the body can be, I just need a shape of an orange peel. Let me draw it. So I just need an orange peel. Except saying that the body is here doesn't fully describe the machine yet. Because I still have to tell how the left leg is bent and how the right leg is bent. So, in fact, the same point here corresponds to four potential states of the machine. Either the up-up bending, or the up-down bending, or the down-up bending, sorry, down-up bending, da, or, da, sorry, up, what am I doing? Sorry, down-up bending, or the down-down bending. So if I wanted a full map of the states of the machine, I will need four orange peels. One corresponding to up-up, one corresponding to up-down, one corresponding to down-up, and one corresponding to down-down. Okay? And now, if I told you that the machine is in this state, you would know that the body is down here and the legs are bent up and down. So, up, down. Okay? So, any point on the union of these four orange peels corresponds to a state of the machine. Now, that's of course wrong for the usual reason. Okay? Namely, if I move towards the right end, the left leg is fully stretched, but the right leg is up. That would be the same as if I was moving towards the right end here. The left leg would be fully stretched and the right leg would be up. So in fact, the points on this line are the same as the points on this line, so I should be gluing them to each other. Okay? But now let's move towards the very left end here. Now the right, so right, this is because the points on this edge correspond to these states. Now, and likewise here. Now if I move towards the very left, then the points correspond to pictures like this, okay, with a knee here. And that's the same as what I would get if I moved here to the very left, right? Because here at the very left, I also see points that look like that. Okay? So therefore, the points on this edge, number two, should be glued to number two. And let's continue. Suppose now I move here towards the right end, things would look like this. And this would all is also what you would be getting on the right end here. Okay? So points here should be glued to points here, and believe me that points on the remaining edge will be glued to points on the remaining edge here. And therefore, I have to take my four orange peels, glue this one to that one, that one to that one, that one to that one, and that one back to the beginning. And the result is, not surprisingly, the same as what we got before, namely a sphere. Are you with me? Are you okay? Okay. So if I wanted to map a three-legged animal, the only one I could find on the web is a certain politician from Texas. You know, when you look for two-legged animals, it's very easy. When you look for four-legged animals, it's very easy. Even five-legged animals are easy. Three-legged animals are really, really tough, and I could only find one on the web. That was 13 years ago. Maybe now there are more. Time to move on to the four-legged roach. Anybody willing to bet that was still the two-legged roach. I'm now moving on to the three-legged machine, and I still haven't described it. Let me describe it. Okay? So anybody willing to bet what the three-legged machine was? Maybe I should make a little table here. Anybody willing to bet what three legs would be? Okay, so let's think a little bit about it. So, if you look at the abstract, it says that what I'm talking about is an introduction to cut and paste topology. So I suppose I have to explain what cut and paste means. So let's talk about the three-legged roach. But let me sort of just think of it as if I had a two-legged roach and I added a further leg. So this one kind of gets added later. Then what happens to the configuration space? The configuration space before, the possible placements of the body before were an orange slice. Adding the third leg will do two things. Well, three things, perhaps. It will cut, double, and glue. So let me explain. First of all, by adding this extra leg, I no longer can visit the top of the previous configuration space. Because, well, the body can no longer reach beyond the reach of the bottom leg. So I cut off a piece. At the same time, I also, for every point not on the boundary, I get a further binary choice. The bottom leg could either be bent to the left or bent to the right. So I sort of double the number of states for any point below the boundary. Okay? So what does the state space look like? Before, it looked like a sphere. We agreed on that. By cutting out the top, I'm drilling a hole in the sphere. I'm cutting a disk out. But then I double the sphere. So the configuration space looks like two spheres with a hole. And a point here would mean let's read the state of the previous two legs, of the original two legs, using the previous recipe, and add a third leg, which is bent to the left. A point here would correspond to, let's read the states of these two legs using the previous recipe, and add a bottom leg bent to the right. Okay? So this will mean bottom bent left, and this will mean bottom bent right. Okay? So, but this is still wrong, as usual. It's wrong because when I approach the boundary, when I'm at the boundary, the bottom leg is fully stretched. So there is no difference between this and that. So in fact, I should be gluing this circle to that circle. You can either do it in your imagination, so you can take this ball, turn it over, and put it on top of here and see what you get. Or here's a different way. As a topologist, I don't care about stretching things. So I will stretch out this piece of the map to here, and then I will stretch out this piece of the map to here, and then I will glue the two ends, and I will get a tunnel connecting the two things. In either case, I will be getting, oops, a picture that looks like this. Okay? But you see, I'm a topologist. For me, this is the same as a sphere. And therefore, the configuration space of a three-legged machine is, how boring, once again a sphere. So what about, are you with me? Is this okay? What about four legs? You see, if it will not get interesting, you should kick me out. So it can't be, again, a sphere. Let's figure out what it is. Okay? So, so I'll do the same as before. I'll draw a three-legged machine. Here is a three-legged machine, or rather, this is where the body can be if we are on a three-legged machine, because there is one leg here, one leg opposite to this, and one leg opposite to, to that, over here. Okay? And now let me add, so these are legs 1, 2, and 3. Let me add the leg number 4 here. What does adding leg number 4 do to the picture? Well, as before, it cuts, it doubles, and it glues. Except that it's a bit more interesting this time. So I cut out a piece. So I take the sphere that I had from the previous step, and I cut out a piece. What's the shape of the piece that I cut? Here's the interesting thing. It is not a disc. It is two discs. I'm actually cutting out, by excluding this part, I'm actually cutting out two pieces. Why? Because if you are in this part, leg number 2 cannot possibly be fully stretched. It has to be either fully bent to the left or very much bent to the right. Okay? So if you are in this domain and you stay within it, if you move around within this domain that's been cut out, there are two possibilities. And you can't go from one to the other. So this domain has two components that are not connected to each other. You cannot move from one component to the other without first going out of that domain that's cut out and then back in. Okay? So we are actually cutting out two disks. One at the top, one at the top, one at the bottom. Why at the top and at the bottom? Because I'm a topologist. It doesn't matter. I could have equally well cut them out in two other places. As a topologist, it makes no difference. Then the rest gets doubled, because the bottom leg can be either bent to the left or bent to the right. So I actually take the sphere with the two cuts and double it. But again, this is wrong in the usual way. Namely, when I approach this cut, when I'm on this cut, it's the same as if I'm on this cut. Because when I'm on the edge here of the thing being cut, of the part being removed, the bottom leg is fully stretched, so it makes no difference if it's on the left or on the right. So any point here should be glued to so points here should be glued to points here, and likewise points here should be glued to points there. And the best way to glue points is, for a topologist, it's just to add tunnels. So I should be adding a tunnel from here to here and a tunnel from here to here. And what did I get?
A torus again.
This is the same, right? This is just one long cylinder that connects to itself. So for a topologist, this is the same as a torus. And let's do five legs, and if it's again one of those, it will be boring. So it better be not. Okay? Maybe before that, the same four-legged animal could have been, I accept the risk. Do not show this again. Sorry. It's my own applet. How dare they even ask? Anyway, here's a different way of seeing the same thing. Gee, am I running out of time? So here's a different way of seeing the same thing. So you see, suppose you have four legs. The body is constrained to stay within a square, or rough square, topological square. Okay? But any placement of the body corresponds to 16 possibilities for the states of the roach. Because you have four legs and you have to tell about each leg whether it's up or down. Okay? So basically, the end result is made out by gluing 16 squares, well, to each other. And you have to be very, very careful about which edge of which square connects to which edge of which other square. That's a lot of work. But you can do it. And it's been done over here. And here are the 16 squares. And here are the corresponding states of the machine. So if I move the green points within a given square, the legs are always bent the same way. Right? But the body is moving. But then when I hop over to the next square, one of the legs changes its bending state, okay? And then when I go over to the next square, another leg switches over. And so on. If I move around in these 16 squares, I go through all possibilities. Except that, again, this is an incomplete picture, because when I go past the very left, I have to glue the very left to the very right and the very bottom to the very top. And therefore, the result is once again a single big square that's glued to itself like before. So it's a torus. Are you okay? I'm out of time and I have much more to say. Pam is gone. I mean, the question is, I should at least do five legs very, very quickly. So, basically, so long as nobody stops me, I'll just go more. I'll just say more, okay? So what happens with you when you do five legs? So you add a leg, it cuts off a piece. But it's not a single piece. It's four pieces. Because when you are here, this leg here cannot be fully stretched because it being fully stretched means being on this line. And the leg here cannot be fully stretched because this leg is fully stretched when you are on this line, which is away from this corner. So each of these legs has been, so each of these legs, these extra two legs, can be legs one and two, can be either up or down. Okay? So a point here really, or rather a cut here, is really four cuts. Okay? So the configuration space of this will be a sphere from which you have removed four disks. Now, where are these four disks? As a topologist, it doesn't matter. I can move them around. So let's move them around. Let's move them down at the bottom. Let's remove them down off the bottom. These are the four discs that's been removed. But then everything gets doubled because the new leg can be either bent up or bent down. So really I get two copies of this sphere with four discs removed. But then I have to glue the top copy to the bottom copy so that this matches with this, this with this, this with this, this with that. And the end result, the way to glue is to add tunnels. And now I got two balls connected by four tunnels. In between the four tunnels, there are dots. What shape is this? What shape is this? Something went wrong. Oh, sorry. The previous thing was not a ball. The previous thing was a torus. So each of these was a torus. Really. And only then I've cut four holes and doubled and glued. Okay? So, you see, adding four tunnels means leaving three gaps between the tunnels. So topologically, this is the same as taking a ball or a donut or whatever and cutting in it two holes at the top and at the bottom for this one and for that one, and then three holes down in the middle. Which amounts to saying that this is tunnel number one, this is tunnel number two, this is number three, this is number four. So the result is a donut with sort of five holes instead of one. So for five legs, you get a so-called genus five surface. Okay? And now let's go back to the question we started from. What if you have six legs? So I'll do it very, very briefly, very, very quickly. So if you have six legs, the process goes as follows. So you take the previous answer, which is a ball with one, two, three, four, five holes. So a genus five surface. You double it. One, two, three, four, five. And you connect the top to the bottom with tunnels. How many tunnels? Well, the ordering was before it was two, then it was four, now it will be eight. So you have to connect these with eight tunnels. One, two, eight. Which amounts to saying that you're taking one big ball and drilling seven holes through it. So how many holes do we have in total? Five at the top, five at the bottom, seven newly created to a total of 17. 17 holes. So the answer for the next step is a genus 17 surface, and you have to admit that you didn't guess it at the beginning of the lecture. I'm not sure if you're convinced, but I hope you could convince yourself if you had more time to think about it. Now, I don't have more time any further, but I could tell you that there is a different way of deriving the same answer using so-called Euler formula. You get the same answer. I could tell you that these machines can also be used to build computational devices. So sort of you can build simple machines, and then there are simple geometrical proofs like here that tell you that this machine compute various arithmetical operations. This is add a constant. Then I have other machines that double a complex number. Or multiply it by a different constant, multiply a complex number by some constant. Then there are other machines, there are other machines to do all sorts of various other arithmetical operations in the complex numbers. So you could, in fact, using the same kind of story, build all sorts of funny things. Here's the machine that squares a complex number. So this is the input in green, the output is in red. When I move the input to 1, the output is also at 1. When I move the input to I, the output is at negative 1. If I try to move the input so that the output will be at I, then the input would be at square root of I, which is this quantity. And it's sort of quite a lot of fun to figure out how this machine works. It's really an assembly of lots of simpler machines that do simpler things. And at the end, you get a bit of complex analysis. But again, I don't have time to show you that, and I don't have time to tell you where all the credits go, except the main bit of credit is to my former student, Dori Eldar. And, you know, this is supposed to be classroom adventures in mathematics. Gia, you're teachers. You know better than me. But I'll tell you two things that I've seen done with this. So one, people actually build these machines, and unfortunately, it's those machines that I skipped that are the most fun to build. So these machines that compute various arithmetical operations, these are the most fun to build. You build them, you take lollipop sticks, and you stick in thumbtacks or whatever, some other way to make the joints, and then you get sort of, you can build computers in principle from lollipop sticks, okay? And then another thing that I used to do with this, that I've done with this, is so I gave a one semester course in topology, and or not in not just in topology. I've done it in several courses. So you know the course goes, you know, let T be a collection of sets which is closed under intersections and finite intersections, arbitrary unions. If you've ever seen the formal definitions, you probably know what I'm talking about. But in parallel to this, for each class in 5 minutes, I would describe what would correspond to 2 minutes of this lecture. So I would ask us a riddle, what's the configuration space of the 1.5-legged machine? Come back a week later, tell them any solutions, people will come up, and build up over a length of time while doing more serious stuff. I'd build up basically all of this. I don't know, that's all I have to say, and I'm way over time, so I apologize.